Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 6th of October 2018, probably episode 3. I've had a few interesting articles, one about CRISPR and lycoprene, a really molecule which I found out about, which is really interesting to get in. I've done a molecular tour last night of it. Not too many people are looking to it because I coupled that molecular tour with a story about a Pacific island I discovered, which has bird-killing trees on it. That's sort of a New Scientist-y type thing. Then there's also the story of the inevitable story of genetic conquest, sort of the new people coming in. And look, I must admit, having seen corporate takeovers and the ritualistic killing and submission, sort of the removing of their previous culture and replacing it with your own, I don't necessarily think they're improvements. I think they think they're improvements, but they're not. They're the more aggressive form. That's the Spanish people, and I forgot the name of those people. It's yum, something or other. It's really testing my memory. That's what this is all about, folks. Although you might be listening to it. What are they? Yeah. The Yamya people. Yamya. I'm sure it's pronounced something really easy to do. The alien life thing is a bit sad. The story about the ionosphere being disrupted by World War II bombs. Sort of, it's got all the right things, but, you know, one doubts the actual science of it. Here's something which I can't really remember reading, so I think I'll take it off from here. Giraffe spot size influences survival. Okay. That's interesting. Giraffes may all look identical to us, but none are exactly the same markings, and certain patterns, especially large round patches, can boost their chances of survival before they turn 4 months old, i.e. that once before 4 months they get eaten. And I think I do remember making a comment here that your ability to differentiate changes as you it's a cultural thing. Biologists can't decide why giraffes evolve patches. You stupid biologists, you can't decide, make up your decisions. Derek Lee at the Wild Nature Institute in North Carolina and his colleagues examined 258 wild baby Maasai giraffes in Tanzania for clues to the impact on patches on the animals. Well, yes. I suppose... Oh yeah, it'd have to be wild because you'd have if they saw this the same thing domesticated giraffes, that wouldn't be and they have to be baby ones because that would have to be. They found that calves with fewer larger spots had 70% higher chance of survival than those with smaller spots. They also found that those with more round spots had 20% higher survival rate than those with elliptical spots. So, yeah, I mean, the spots may be a sign of the giraffe's health or their time in utero. There'll be a whole lot of other things. Okay. Worm bots build cocoon-like tubes. A swarm of silkworm-inspired robots build dozens of spiral tubes, a test that may pave the way, using them to make bridges and buildings. Each of the fiberbot is a 30-centimeter tall cylinder with a thin arm sticking out the top. To build a tube, the robot winds a fiberglass thread around its body, a bit like making a cocoon. After creating an 8-centimeter long segment, the fiberbot crawls forward to build the next section. Neri Oxman of Massachusetts Institute of Technology and her colleagues created 22 fiberbots that could work as a team. They pre-program each with details about the length and curvature of products they required, and installed an algorithm to prevent collisions. Over the course of 12 hours, okay, it doesn't say how many it does, oh well, the swarm built sections of curved tubes with heights ranging from 2.5 to 1.8 meters. So, that's 12 hours. what to do. So that's 40 centimeters. so if it, oh, now let's work this out. 12 hours. So it was 6 hours to do 1.25 meters, which is roughly, is that 10 centimeters an hour? 10 to 20 centimeters an hour, that's 8 centimeters, so it takes an hour to do a little bit of tube. Let's do this one out. 12 hours. So around 20 centimeters an hour, or 20 to 40 centimeters an hour. It's about three of those 30 centimeter. Oh no. Oh, it does 8 centimeters, so that's about three goes each times an hour. So it must set. Fiberglass is a light material used to make hollow golf clubs, pipes, and even spacecraft parts. It can bear more weight than some metals and tolerate extreme conditions such as strong wind and temperature. However, it's bulky and hard to transport in tube form. Oxmans envisions fiberbots working in remote, even extraterrestrial environments. Yeah, I mean, it looks weird, but, you know, seeing what they do is just bizarre. Okay, chemical pollution may wipe out half the world's killer whales. A pollutant that builds up in the blubber and kills whales could obliterate half of all known orca populations within a century, marine biologists have warned. My only thing is what have been known. Polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, can disrupt reproduction, leading to dwindling birth rates. Up to 1.5 million tons of PCBs were manufactured globally until and 1993, so that's the total number of PCBs. Remember, we use that in circuit boards. Well, we're going to be faced out because of emerging evidence of farm to wildlife. So 1993 would have been the last I would have really heard of it. They were widely used as heat-resistant fluids, yeah, in electrical kit, as a stabilizer for paints, sealants, and solvents. PCBs can stay in the environment for decades, becoming disproportionately concentrated in the body fat of animals at the top of the food chain, such as orcas. Jean Perrier de Forge of the Aarhus University of Denmark led the analysis to see which of the 19 orca populations were most contaminated and how this might affect the long-term reproduction. He and his colleagues measured the PCB content of the skin of 351 orcas. So that's roughly 20 orcas. That's 10. Tenish more, 12 orcas per population. Using estimates from previous studies in other animals of how PCB levels affect reproductive success, the researchers worked out how orca populations could fare. They concluded that 10 of the 19 populations could be wiped out by 2100s. The worst affected would be the orcas off the UK, Brazil, Greenland, and Japan, and the Strait of Gibraltar. DeVorge says the only hope for such population is faster destruction of waste containing PCB, 80% of which is still awaits safe disposal. You know what I have to do? There seems a weak link in their chain about, say, they're looking at other animals. Oh, that's in the orcas. Okay, and you know, what the reproductive thing is, you know, how it affects it. How the male fly got its odd genitals. Female flies laying their eggs in unusual locations can result in surprising knock-on effects for the shape of male fly genitals. This will explain how variants of one species becomes two species. So remember that only terrestrial animals, and animals which have gone from the land back into the sea, had to deal with the fact of lack of water around. Got internal fertilization going, so most of these things go external fertilization. Although, I Because you have insects mating and dragonflies mating, including flies mating, they're staying on top. Frogs mate, or frogs are external stuff. It's really interesting to see how this goes. Unlike most fruit flies, spotted wings Drosophila lay eggs in unblemished rather than rotten fruit. To do so, the females evolved a longer, serrated version of its egg-laying ovipositor organ. Now, this is an obstacle for males during sex. Okay, so they go internal mating and then goes... Oh, that's right, the amphibians who came first out were external. Ayatashihi in Tokyo Metropolitan University of Japan and her colleagues investigated how this change affected, of course, but polyps and things which can't move just throw their sperm out. Okay, this is coral polyps. Investigated how the changes affected male anatomy during mating by looking at D. Suzuki and closely related species D. subgulia by flash freezing copulating pairs. Copulating and then you just whack liquid nitrogen on it. They found D. Suzuki males have anal palates with longer, thicker bristles than normal. These contact the ovipositor during the copulation. As a result, females of D. subgulia species struggle if they try to mate with the D. Suzuki males. This may be one explanation for how the two variants evolved to become two different species that don't breed, a key question in evolutionary biology. Well, that's, I remember watching a 1976 conference. There was a science conference Dad went to and I went to as a kid. And there was a big, long show about these aphids, which had different copulation habits. Laser light's path to quantum gravity. Now, this sounds interesting. Powerful laser beams have a gravitational field. Of course, light does. Light is energy, energy to gravity. Because it all bends space. So you just can't convert. Oh, the light's, the sun is getting lighter. It's, yeah, you'd be able to, yeah, it'd be really complex if this didn't work. It helps explain how gravity works in the quantum realm. According to Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity, anything with energy also has gravity, even if, like light, it's massless. So the sun, which is currently converting thousands of tons of mass into energy, equals mc squared, its gravity isn't being affected. The gravity declines as the actual light passes out. They only take into account, but the most models of light take of gravity are simple. They only take into account light's behavior as a particle, but not as a wave, when in fact it's both. Ugh, I hate that type of stuff. Now, Fabian Schneiter of the University of Tübingen, Germany, and her colleagues have devised a mathematical model that also takes into account light's wave nature. The team calculations confirm that lasers being gravitational force should exist, even if it's too small for us to detect with current technology. That's a bit odd. I wouldn't put that way. But it is. Okay. If we had detectors that could spot the effect, it might help us bridge the gap between quantum mechanics and gravity. It's a bit strange. Which are incompatible in current theories. Observing light's quantum and relativistic properties at once may help us understand quantum gravity, says a team member, Dennis Ratzel, at the University of Vienna in Austria. Gee whiz. Let me understand that. Light has only got relativistic properties. Light travels at the speed of light. I don't think I understand that one. Has the light have got not relativistic properties? I don't know. Okay. Inside space politics. The trench time in orbit. Okay, so there's a big thing. One of the Soyuz capsules had a drill hole in it. A 2mm drill hole, obviously, thing. And was it the Americans trying to sabotage the Russians, or the Russians trying to sabotage the US? standing back, the two people are trying to sabotage each other. It was definitely sabotage. Okay, so let's give you an idea. A small hairline crack in a Soyuz capsule on re-entry meant that when they opened them up, they were all dead inside, so air can leak out really quickly. So there's a small drill hole in one of the Soyuz capsules, and it went through. Now, the drill holes, you don't require very much, so these capsules are not for ocean or anything like that. They wouldn't survive. They're very thin. The size, the walls of spacecraft are the size of Coke cans. Quite literally, they're not thick. And the reason is that the atmosphere there, the atmospheric pressure, is one-fifth of our atmospheric pressure. But we don't die because it's one-fifth up there is oxygen. So this is one of the things that these spacecraft have very thin walls, because they just pump out the nitrogen as you go up. They just reduce the pressure inside. The pressure inside drops. You bubble. So that's, now it bends is when the pressure increases, this pressure decreases. So the pressure in the atmosphere and space stations is 1/5 normal, but it's pure oxygen, so you can get people living there. So that's good. But what happens is that there was an emergency leak found in there. Now, I think people would have a good idea about who did it. So there's a leak in the Soyuz space station. Now, this is not current news. I'm beginning to discover the more detailed fact I know is the more I'm alienated from society. So I'm just quietly got my bizarre fact library going. Okay, talk of sabotage. The International Space Station has exposed cracks in the US-Russia space ties, says Lee Crane. Okay, so there is a 2mm drill hole in the Soyuz capsule. Soyuz is the only Russian-based thing capable of still reaching the space station. They decommissioned the space shuttle, therefore had to actually pay for the Russians to go up. So it's been sort of funding the Russian thing up there. So the Russians are very unlikely to have done this, because they wouldn't shoot themselves in the foot. So it's going up there. The Elon Musk, and a more sober effort by Boeing, is going ahead to build economic visitors to the space station. Interestingly, I taught many years ago, over 10 years ago, a group, a classroom about the space station, because they were having a radio transmission to the space station. But of course, I asked her a while, I said, does anyone know where the space station is? And a lot of people thought the space station was on Earth, and a majority of people, I would say, would not know that we have this fairly big, long space station up in space. What is it? The International Space Station, ISS. And it's got a little train inside it, and different international sections going along. Let's read about it. So it's been recently sabotaged, and this has set the cat amongst the pigeons. Let's see. If NASA wants to send humans into space, it has to stay friends with Roscosmos, its Russian counterpart. I think Roscosmos is not a state-owned thing. Okay, NASA's state. In turn, if Roscosmos wants to keep the International Space Station running, it has to stay friends with NASA. But the US-Russian relationship in space has reached a critical point. On 10th of October, newly appointed NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine, obviously Jewish, and Roscosmos Director Dmitry Rogozin will meet in person for the first time. Well, that's reasonable, because he's just newly appointed. This meeting was sparked by a drill hole that was found last month in the Russian Soyuz capsule docked in the ISS. So this 2mm drill hole. That was obviously the drill hole, because you could see the paint in the picture. You could see the paint dripped off where they just did the drill hole across. And it's absolutely no way, there is no way that having built pressure systems, you could possibly, that could possibly have happened on Earth. Okay? Because having done these sorts of things, you pressurize these things to check, and you overpressurize to check for leaks. So it would You know, look, I definitely know, having built pressure systems, vacuum systems, there is no way. And this is, I must admit, I've been in labs where I've had, indeed, nothing against Russians, but these Russian people sabotaged the lab. That's interesting. Look, the psychology going inside these people are really complicated, especially Russia, poor Russia. Okay. At present, the Soyuz is the only aircraft able to transport humans to the ISS, and NASA pays Roscosmos for the privilege. Following the Hubble's discovery, many Russian media outlets have reported suspicions that the US astronauts sabotaged the Soyuz, which I would have, but it's sort of a Russian type of thing, sabotage. Suppose this would force an emergency return trip to Earth for the crew that the US wouldn't have to pay for. Both Rosin and NASA astronauts Drew Fustel, the current ISS commander, have strongly denied the rumours, but the Russian media has quoted Roscosmos insiders saying otherwise, fueling the fire. Well, who would you believe? Who would you believe? As an Australian, who do you believe? Oh, the rest of the world's just so rubbish, including Aussie. The talk of sabotage seems to be laying bare the cracks in the long-held ties between the agencies. Quote, the suspicion and distrust grows to show that it's not that healthy a relationship, unquote, says Todd Harrison at the Center for Strategic and International Studies at Washington, D.C. Well, thank you very much. Shut up. They just call themselves a think tank, more like a wank tank. It has endured because of the shared interest and mutual dependence, like most things in life. That is set to change next year. NASA plans for a homegrown ride to the ISS, with the first crewed launches from the US soil since the end of the space shuttle program in 2011. The US has never intended to rely on Russia for so long. In 2014, NASA tasked Boeing and SpaceX with building crew capsules to fly on the firm's own rockets to ISS. Typical. This is getting competing teams working on the same project. And Hitler did the same. Hitler did the same thing. He had different companies, and they used to compete. Wouldn't always produce the best high quality. Would produce a showy tank, which wouldn't be mass produced, but it would certainly produce an impressive tank that Hitler would like. Okay. At the time, SpaceX's Crew Dragon was meant to have the first crewed flight before the end of 2016, while Boeing's Starliner capsule was to launch in 2017. But these ambitious projects have been plagued by setbacks. According to a January report from the US government, Accountability Office, GAO, how do you like that? GAO, the firms, surely the whole government has to be accountability. Oh, we're no longer accountable here, we're going to put accountability into Accountability Office. The firms have announced delays of at least half their quarterly status reviews since 2014. SpaceX's first uncrewed test flight is now slated for November, and Boeing's is due to take place sometime in late 2018 and early 2019. Crewed flights are planned for mid-2019. Any additional delays could be a major problem because NASA has only brought rides in the ISS to early 2020. I think they knew that. You always put this thing in slippage in projects. Any additional delay? Okay. But in theory, the likelihood of further major delays should be falling because many parts have been built and tested, said Jonathan McDonald at Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics at Massachusetts. It also helps that the two horses are in the running. The decision, that's a great thing to do that, and like I've done projects like that, and you don't rely on one supplier. The decisions that NASA made to fund two separate programs is incredibly sensible and clearly the right thing to have done, and that's becoming even more clear now, said McDonald. Nevertheless, the GAO report in June found the schedules are still likely to slip and there may be a gap in access to the ISS if there is any more delays. SpaceX may be particularly at risk of missing deadlines given the company's many competing endeavours. It's really interesting. I've gotten the huge spacecraft, aircraft, missile division. I could actually phone in and speak to their missile development engineers. I said, oh, I have this technical question, it's questionable development. And I got right in and spoke to them. Was it Hughes? Oh, was it McDonnell Douglas? I can't remember. They're missile people. Okay, last month, CEO Elon Musk announced a deal to send Japanese billionaire Yasuo Maeda on a jaunt around the moon using the huge, Big Falcon rocket, which was BFR, Big Fucking Rocket, but he says Falcon Rocket, which is currently being developed. Musk has said that he wants BFR to replace both the firm's Falcon Rocket, with the plan to carry the SpaceX crew capsule, and the larger Heavy, which only launched for the first time this year. God. The divided attention at SpaceX is cause for concern for NASA and the US Department of Defense, which hires firms for many of its satellite launches, says John Logson at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. It's hard to plan the future use of Falcon 9 and Falcon Heavy when Elon says there's going to be replaced by BFR, he says. Elon's just a complete nightmare. If delays means NASA runs out of pre-purchased seats before the US-made capsules are ready, it isn't clear US astronauts will be able to continue visiting the ISS. Oh, nightmare scenario. Mention no US president in there, oh my god. At the same time, the ISS cannot function without the expertise of at least one astronaut trained at NASA in Houston, says McDonnell. That doesn't have to be NASA astronaut. European, Canadian, Japanese crews also receive training, but Russian cosmonauts are qualified to operate the non-Russian parts of the ISS, and if left without maintenance for long enough, they'll start to break down. Can I definitely say that's very much similar type of iPad. When you have Russians in your laboratory, they form a little subculture. That's my experience. Things may have changed by now. End of an era. Even without this issue, the loss of the US access to the ISS could result in some far-reaching political decisions being taken. Thank you, Donald Trump. If there are no Americans on the space station, then I think at some point the US government has to make a decision of whether they pull the plug, says Harrison. At that point, I don't think the Europeans or the Russians could take over, so we'd have to deorbit the station. I'm going to pull out of everything. Yeah, just go for it, Yanks. The current US budgets include plans for the ISS to until 2024. So there are already been talk of deorbiting it then, but we don't yet know how to bring the space station back to Earth safely. As such, being forced into an earlier deorbit would probably be both costly and dangerous. If there are delays in getting Boeing and the space station's capsules flying, SpaceX's capsules flying, but it doesn't look like it will be too long, NASA might just extend the astronauts' ISIS stays to help the US side of the station running. Oh god, imagine out there. Oh, tell you what, it's sort of like being stuck in a room. It's big, right, but it's not that big. Especially it's a bit, I'd get claustrophobic. You're not going to want to take a lot of extra sandwiches with you because you might be up there for a while, said McDonald. Or, if the deadline is looming, NASA might just try to hurry things up. That sort of situation would certainly light a fire under SpaceX and Boeing, says Laura Gregor, the Union of Concerned Scientists of Massachusetts. What is the Union of Concerned Scientists? What? But certifying new spacecrafts, or what? How do you get to do that? How is that an institution, the Union of Concerned Scientists? But certifying new spacecraft for human uses is difficult and a vital task. That's not a process you want to rush, he says. The idea isn't unheard of. In 2017, NASA studied the possibility of sending humans on the first flight of its Space Launch System rocket, which is designed to eventually carry deep space missions to the moon and beyond. The study concluded that an accelerated timeline wouldn't be worth the added cost and risk. Quote, and my father was involved in NASA. risk calculating. They actually do quite a good job. Quote, if we had to launch next month with a human, we could probably cobble something together in time, but it would be neither safe nor comfortable, said Matthew Hirsch of Harvard University. NASA is risk averse, so hurried first commercial flights would be heavily scrutinized. Quote, crew safety is our priority, so we won't rush anything, says NASA spokesperson. At last, and perhaps the most likely option for NASA, to buy more Soyuz seats. Roscosmos didn't respond to New Scientist's request for comment on what the agency would do if NASA made such a request. Previously, NASA, come on, a lot of these people, I find out that all of these agencies, they didn't respond. They sort of, they might ring up the receptionist. And a lot of these news agencies, when they phone up, they don't really make a big serious effort, and then they say, oh, they didn't respond. And then they can't respond that they didn't respond because it just sounds worse. Okay, previously NASA had to book tickets 3 years in advance, which cost nearly $82 million per seat. With all the spots on the Soyuz ships after 2020 having already been doled out to Russian cosmonauts, Roscosmos would have to put some of its space exploration plans aside for the benefit of NASA. That makes it likely that any additional seats in the Soyuz capsule would come at a much higher cost than before. Yet if all goes well for NASA, it would be a critical blow to the Russian space flight industry. Not having many Soyuz launches to the station will hit their space sector pretty hard, says Harrison. They're losing critical source of cash. Roscosmos budget for 2016 to 2025, 9 years, is about $20.5 billion, which is only about a bit over $2 billion a year. Meanwhile, NASA's budget for 2017 alone is $19 billion. NASA typically, so this is spending 10 to 1, but they get really poor quality. Darling, do you want to drive?
They're so wet. I'm going to take my other.
Okay. Ross, paying, NASA typically bought about 4 Soyuz seats a year, paying Roscosmos hundreds of millions of dollars. And that is one reason Roscosmos to continue providing NASA with seats if there are any delays, says Longston. Ultimately, the US stops relying on Russia for access to the station. The erosion of trust and NASA's biggest budget is likely to bring a permanent shift. Quote, in the next decade, I think U.S.-Russia relationship will change from Russia being a critical partner in human spaceflight to Russia being one of many partners, says Logson. I don't think the U.S. will get itself into this sort of dependence again. Look, it's just absolutely sickening. So I've been in labs where there's sabotage. Fortunately, there's big investigations when it does happen, but it is awful. And this whole sort of puts a real sick feeling through your bones, this type of sabotage. So you can imagine this drill hole. So get it. There's the space someone station, and someone's got a power drill and drilled it through you. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.